learning from Rabbi Zilberman. Mar Makomas again are in the chat. You should be able to see it there. With no further ado, Rabbi Zilberman.
Thank you, Rabbi Shabtai. Last week, we discussed some of the details surrounding the performance of mitzvahs on the part of conversion candidates. Are there any mitzvahs that we tell a conversion candidate that he or she may not perform? And today, I wanted to discuss one detail, significant detail, that comes up a lot during the conversion process. And that pertains to the topic of hosting conversion candidates for yontif meals. Now, on the one hand, we're very much supportive of and insistent that a conversion candidate through the process leading up to Geirus become properly integrated into the frum community. And the best way of doing that during normal non-COVID times is getting together with members of the community, having meals as a guest at the families in the community. However, there is one significant halakhic hurdle that, as we'll see, may in some circumstances be insurmountable, affecting the ability of inviting conversion candidates to yontif meals. And that's based on a Gemara in Beis on Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We know that when it comes to yontif, there are certain malachos, certain situations in which it is permissible to perform malachos for the sake of ochel nefesh, for the sake of food preparation. If something could not have been done the same way before yontif, there are scenarios in which you can prepare food and perform malacha involved in preparing food for the sake of yontif. However, the Gemara tells us in Beis on Daf Kaf Aleph Amud Aleph, the Gemara has a drasha of lachem v'lo l'nachrim. You're only allowed to perform malachas ochel nefesh, malachas involved in preparing food for the benefit of Jews and not for the benefit of non-Jews. And then the Gemara says, Mizamnin es hanachri b'Shabbos, you're allowed to invite a non-Jew as your guest on Shabbos. Ve'ein mizamnin es hanachri b'yantiv. However, you're not allowed to invite a non-Jew to be your guest on yantiv. Why? Gezeira shema yarba b'shvila. We're concerned that if you're going to invite a non-Jew to be your guest on yantiv, then you may come to cook extra for the benefit of this non-Jewish guest, and that would be prohibited. You're only allowed to cook on yantiv for the benefit of a Jew, not for the benefit of a non-Jew. So for that reason, there is a gzeira derabanan, the rabbinic edict, that you're not allowed to invite a non-Jew to be your yantiv guest. And this is codified in Shulchan Aruch, Aruch Chaim Tavkuf Yud Beis Sif Aleph, Tavkuf Yud Beis Sif Aleph. You're not allowed to cook for a non-Jew on yantiv, and therefore you're not allowed to invite them to be your guest. So at first glance, this poses a very big impediment to inviting a conversion candidate to be your guest at a yontif meal. The conversion candidate is still not Jewish. You're not allowed to invite a non-Jew for a yontif meal. Now, some achronim point out that if it's a yontif that falls on Shabbos, that's not a problem because you can't cook anywhere on Shabbos. So we're only talking about a weekday yontif meal, but that still is a problem for most days of yontif that falls on a weekday. So what I'd like to discuss over the next few minutes is, are there situations in which there may be exceptions to this rule? Are there creative solutions that could potentially allow inviting a conversion candidate to a yontif meal? So Shulchan Aruch does paskin there in Simen Tav Kuf Yud Beis that if a non-Jew shows up uninvited, then you're allowed to feed him on yontif. The concern is you're not allowed to invite him because you're going to prepare ahead of time, and then you may come to cook extra, which would be a malacha. But if the person's going to crash, we're not worried that you're going to cook extra because he came unannounced. So theoretically, crashing would be a solution to this problem, but that may still be socially awkward and not appreciated by the host if a random conversion candidate knocks on your door on a yontif and asks to eat with you. So technically, that could be a solution, but it's not always that practical. What about the Seder? Seder is the same problem. Seder is a yontif meal, and you're not allowed to invite a non-Jew for a yontif meal unless we have any of the exceptions that we may talk about in the shiur today. There may, in theory, be more creative ways to crash. One of my colleagues suggested that you could have the system along these lines. Let's say you have a roster of 12 families in the shul, and you tell the 12 families that you should be prepared. There may be a conversion candidate that comes and crashes. So they don't have knowledge that anyone's going to come. There's a possibility someone may come. So maybe we're not worried that Shema Yarbi Shvilo. But again, that's not necessarily a practical solution. Some of the grounds for leniency discussed by Poskim are as follows. Reb Nissen Karelitz, Chud Hashani, Yontif Perek Dalid, writes that let's say you don't explicitly invite a non-Jew, but you say some kind of parv language like, I have food available for you. So he thinks that doesn't necessarily run into the prohibition of formally inviting a non-Jew for a Yontif meal. Minchas Yitzchak, Dayan Weiss, Cheli Bey Simen Kuf Yud Ches, Cheli Bey Simen Kuf Yud Ches. Minchas Yitzchak was the Av Bezdin in Manchester before becoming the Av Bezdin of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. So he discusses the permissibility of having a Jewish hotel owner that has non-Jewish staff catering to non-Jewish guests on Yontif. So you have a Jewish-owned hotel. There's non-Jewish help in the kitchen. Can a Jewish hotel proprietor have non-Jewish guests over Yontif? He owns the kitchen. He's responsible for the food. And how can you have non-Jewish guests in the hotel over Yontif? So he paskins over there that as long as you have non-Jewish staff doing all the work in the kitchen, and there's no real possibility that a Jew is going to come into the kitchen and get involved in any food preparation over Yontif, then it would be permissible to have non-Jewish guests in the hotel. What's his calculation? So it is true that in general, there is a notion of marba b'shirim, that even where under certain circumstances a malacha is permissible, but you can't do more than that which is permissible. So let's say you're allowed to cook for a chola, but if you cook more than the amount that the chola needs, even though it's in the same pot, that's a violation of marbe b'shirim. So here also, very good that you're cooking for non-Jews. Together with Jews, but you're cooking extra for the non-Jew. So he has the following calculation, two-pronged kula. On the one hand, even if a Jew were to cook extra, that's only a derabbanan violation of marbe b'shirim. And if a non-Jew is doing the malacha, so that's a derabbanan of amir l'nachri, having a non-Jew doing malacha on your behalf. So the general principle is that a shvus to shvus, a double derabbanan, where there's a significant need, is permissible. So here you have a double derabbanan, marbe b'shirim, cooking extra for the non-Jew is derabbanan, and having the non-Jew do the cooking is also derabbanan. So if there's a consideration of darkei shalom, if there's a consideration that if you're going to have a Jewish-owned hotel and you're going to ban any non-Jews from the hotel over Yontif, that's going to create animosity and ill will, if not worse. So then that would be sufficient to allow a shvus to shvus, to allow this double derabbanan of having the non-Jewish help in the kitchen do all the cooking, even if they're going to be non-Jewish guests in the hotel as well. So Rav Schefter pointed out, again, this is not terribly practical, but along these lines, if you accept this suggestion of the Minchas Yitzchak, so let's say you have, you cede your kitchen to non-Jewish help, and the non-Jewish help is doing all the food preparation in the kitchen to the point that even if you wanted to come and help in the kitchen, they wouldn't let you. So then under such circumstances, maybe it'd be permissible to invite a conversion candidate for a Yontif meal. Again, that's not a very practical solution in most situations. There is some discussion in the more recent literature. Does it help to have an invited guest acquire the food that he's going to eat during the Yontif meal ahead of time? Is, let's say you set aside the portion that the non-Jew is going to eat before Yontif, and you have him come and acquire the food so that it's not the Jewish balabasas anymore. It belongs to the non-Jew. You set that aside. And maybe that would minimize the concern of Shema Yarbi Bishvilo, and that wouldn't be considered technically inviting someone for a yontif meal. So in the Mosada Rav Kook edition of the Rashba on Beitza, the author of the footnote there quotes that he heard from Rav Yashiv the following. He said this in the context of inviting a Mechalel Shabbos to a yontif meal. So that's the question. Does the prohibition of inviting a non-Jew to a yontif meal, Shema Yarbi Bishvilo, lest you come and cook for the non-Jew, does that apply to a Mechalel Shabbos as well? So that's a discussion in Poskim that may depend on the following. So that's maybe Machlokas Rishonim, are you allowed to invite a Mechalel Shabbos to a yontif meal? Mishnah Brura is a machmir on that in Tafkuf Yudbeis, Sif Katan Yudbeis. So we'll come back to the rationale for that in a moment. But so let's assume for purposes of our discussion that you're not allowed to invite a Mechalel Shabbos to a yontif meal. So the author of the footnotes on the Rashba and Beitza says that he heard from Avil Yashiv that if you want to invite a non-Jew for a Mechalel Shabbos for yontif meal, you can acquire the food on his behalf before yontif and tell him that the food belongs to him. Now, that question as to whether the gzeira of inviting a non-Jew to yontif meal applies to Mechalel Shabbos, that may depend on what exactly the impetus for the gzeira is. Is the concern that you may come to cook specifically non-kosher food? Or is it a concern that you may come to cook anything and you're not allowed to cook extra for a non-Jew? So if the concern is you may come to cook non-kosher food, that may be limited to a non-Jew, not to a Mechalel Shabbos. If we're talking about cooking extra, and a Mechalel Shabbos is dino ka'akim, has a din of a non-Jew in certain areas of halacha, then maybe it would apply there as well. The Rabbi Moshe Klein, a contemporary author of Sefer Mishnah Sager, says that could theoretically create a kula for gayrus candidates. If we're worried that you may come to cook a non-kosher food on behalf of the non-Jew, that's presumably not going to be relevant to a conversion candidate who is now keeping a kosher lifestyle. But you know, this question or the possibility of acquiring food on behalf of the other person, it's questionable whether that really solves the problem. Or if Nissen Karelitz, who we quoted earlier, writes that he doesn't think that having the non-Jew acquire food ahead of Yontif is going to solve the problem completely, because who's to say you may not cook extra food for him anyway? So you'll set aside his portion, but you may want to cook extra food regardless, so you haven't necessarily solved the problem by giving him the food ahead of time. In one of the collections of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's Psakim, the Shulchan Shlomo on Arachayim here, so they write that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was asked once on behalf of a Rosh Yeshiva in Russia whether it was appropriate to invite the boys in the yeshiva over for yontif meals, even though some of the boys in the yeshiva were not halachically Jewish or were in the process of converting. So in that situation, he has a yeshiva from Bali Tshuva. Some of the people aren't Jewish. So can he invite the boys learning in the yeshiva for a yontif meal? So Shlomo Zalman there is quoted as saying, you don't have to acquire the food on behalf of these people ahead of time, which sounds like maybe acquiring the food does have some benefit in certain circumstances. But Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying the following, that Based on another comment in the Mishnah Brura, there in Sivkat and Tes, he writes that the situation in which we're worried about Shema Yarbi Bishvilo, the situation in which we're concerned that you may come to cook extra on behalf of your guest, that's only true where the guest is someone that you're particularly honored to be hosting. is someone asked about the Seder. If you're hosting the President of the United States for your Seder, so then you will do what you can to prepare everything necessary. But if you're hosting someone that you're doing him a favor by inviting him, so then maybe we're not concerned about Shema Yarba Bishvila. Mishnah Berurah says this in the context of the hechter to feed an Eved Kanani or a Shivcha Kananis on Yantiv. If you have an Eved or a Shivcha, even a regular Shivcha, you have an Eved or Shivcha in the house, so you're doing them a favor by feeding them. There, we're not concerned about Shema Yarbi Bishvilo. So in the case of the boys from the yeshiva that are being hosted by the Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva is doing them a favor. They're not worried, Shema Yarbi Bishvilo. If it's not a particular honor to host these people, you're doing them a favor because otherwise they would have nowhere else to eat. So that's what Rosh Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying as another potential leniency under certain circumstances to invite non-Jews to a Yontif meal. Our Av Beis Din, Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Zichrono Livracha, had a chiddush, a lukula, a significant leniency when it came to these matters of inviting conversion candidates to Yontif meals. As we discussed last time, there was the famous controversy in Yerushalayim in 1848 of the Malvolo Tavo, the ger who had a bris mila performed on him but wasn't able to go to the mikveh before Shabbos, and the controversy between the standing deputy Av Beis Din, Rosh Lemel, who ruled that this conversion candidate, who he noted may have been none other than the famous Warder Kressen, needed to be Michal Shabbos on Shabbos because he was not yet halachically Jewish. And the whole controversy that ensued after that, when many Rabbanim in Europe disagreed with Apsak, and for different reasons assumed that a Malvolo Tavo, someone who already underwent a bris mila but hasn't yet gone through tefila, is either may keep Shabbos or must keep Shabbos and does not have the status of a non-Jew in that regard. So as we noted, alluded to last time, the tshuva of the Binyan Siyan, Simin Tzadi Aleph, the Binyan Siyan had the journal Shamir Tzion and Emanah published in Europe, which had a collection of various tshuvas on this topic, and then he printed his own tshuva in his tshuva sefer, the Binyan Siyan. So he wrote that in this situation, a person who already went through a mila but hasn't yet undergone tvila has the status of Yasa Mechal Akum or Lechla Yisrael Loba. So he has a quasi-status. He's not a full non-Jew. He's not a full Jew. He's somewhere in the middle. So that Yasa Mechal Akum, Lechla Yisrael Loba, has a certain middle status that allows him to keep Shabbos. Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher, Chela Gimel Simen Ches, Chela Gimel Simen Ches, Minchas Elazar, takes this notion of Binyan Siyan one step further, and he allowed for a non-Jewish conversion candidate, a woman working towards conversion, who had not yet completed her Geiris. So as opposed to a Malvolo Tavo, as opposed to a male ger, where there are two clear formal steps of geiris, both mila and tefila, and the discussion there was someone who's in the middle between mila and tefila. A woman has no mila, obviously, so all she needs is tefila. So the case that the Munkacher was dealing with was of a woman who was holding by converting, but for whatever technical reason, didn't yet go to the mikveh in front of a Beis Din, and then she passed away. So are you allowed to bury her? Are you allowed to bury her? B'kfuras Yisrael. So the Minchas Elazar has a notion along the lines of this Binyan Siyan that this woman already has some status. She's not halachically Jewish yet, but she's at the finish line. So she has some, on some level, she's Yatsa Meklal Akum, not fully halachically, but he's asking that you're allowed to bury this woman in a Jewish cemetery, Berichuk Shmona Amos, 8 Amos away from the nearest Kever Yisrael, but still in a Jewish cemetery. We had a case like that going back about 13 years ago, where there was someone who was in the conversion process in a small town, where they really could have used him for a minion. And he was basically at the finish line. But there was something holding up the Geirus that he had been previously married and divorced from a another non-Jewish woman. And the final matters of the divorce were dragging out of the courts, and he didn't yet have his complete judgment. So we weren't prepared to have someone convert until they were properly legally divorced from their non-Jewish wife. So that was dragging on. And unfortunately, before he was able to complete the Geirus, he passed away. So Rav Schwartz ruled on the basis of this Minchas Elazar that you could bury this person in a Jewish cemetery. He was ready to finish his Geirus as soon as the technicality would have been resolved. The Rav Schwartz paskin to bury this person in a Jewish cemetery, Berichah Shmona Amos, along the lines of the Minchas Elazar. So back to our story, Rav Schwartz thought that just as the Binyan Siena is an ocean of Yasamachal Akamachla Yisrael Loba, and just as the Minchas Elazar applies this in the context of Geirus for Kvuas Yisrael, even for women where there's no Mila. So Rav Schwartz thought that for a conversion candidate also, once they're ready significantly along the way towards conversion, so yeah, they're 100% not Jewish, but in certain respects, they have some kind of a, not a Jewish status, but there's certain privileges that are unique. So he thought that the Isser of Ein Mezamnin Nochri for Suda Zantiv will not apply to a conversion candidate. So that was his bikula, that you can invite Geirus candidates for Yantiv meals on that basis. Question in the chat. Would the issue of Shema Yarvi Bishvila apply if you generally prepare more food than necessary for most meals on Yantiv as far as the non-Jew or Mechal Shabbos is concerned as a kula? So poskim generally don't assume that way, because even if you say that you prepare more food than necessary, but maybe you'll have more guests that come and then you'll prepare even more food. So it's hard to draw the line. I don't think poskim are prepared to be mako on that basis. Okay. So if you don't accept Rav Schwartz's kula, are there other grounds to be mako on this shiloh? So in an article in Or Yisrael is one of the good contemporary halachic journals, comes out of Muncie. So Or Yisrael, volume 75, Tishrei, Tafshin Ayin Ches. There's an article by Rabbi Akiva Dershowitz, who is a Rosh Kol in Yerushalayim, a Talmud of Rosh Weiss, who quotes an unpublished Shuva of Rav Asher, which has still not been published, in which he has other possible grounds for leniency to invite the conversion candidates to Yontif meals based on a combination of factors. So number one, this is along the lines of the question we just addressed, but not exactly the same point, that nowadays, generally speaking, most of our food preparation is done before Yontif. So with that preamble, with that agdama, that in practice, most of our preparation is done before Yantiv, Rav Asher felt that you could be sorry if a number of different factors to create a kula if you join all these different shitas together, even if each one alone is a minority shita, but if you put a few things into the mix, that might be able to create a kula under extenuating circumstances. So kula number one, or minority opinion number one, is that of the Me'iri. Me'iri writes, that if you say to a non-Jew that you're only inviting him on the condition that you're not going to cook anything extra for him, then you're allowed to extend that invitation for a Yantiv meal. I mean, you say from the get-go, you should know that I'm not going to cook anything extra for you. So again, it's not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, not quoted in Lalacha, but there is such a line in the Me'iri that we're not worried about Shema Yarvi Bishvilo, and the Gzeira Derabanan of Ein Mezamnin Nachri for Sudas Yantiv doesn't apply if you're going to tell him straight out from the beginning, I'm not going to cook anything extra for you. So that's minority position number one. Then number two, the Magen Avraham there in Tavkuf Yud Beis, Sivkatan Beis, Tavkuf Yud Beis, Sivkatan Beis, quotes a Sefer Atanya. Sefer Atanya is not the Baal Atanya, it's not the Alter Rebbe, it's an earlier Sefer. So the Magen Avraham quotes from this Sefer HaTanya that what Mr. Brand was getting at before, that if everything is already prepared before Yontiv, then you're allowed to invite a non-Jew. The Lashon is, Achar Shetikein called Tzarech Yisuda, Samuch Lusuda, Matu Les Mido. If you're ready, prepared everything ahead of time, everything's on the table, so now you can go out, Halach Ma'anya called Dichvin Yesiv Yechil, go find someone in the street, go find the non-Jew to invite. Because once you're ready, finish all the preparation, and everything's, the table's all set, and you're not going to do anything else, you're not going to prepare anything else, then you could invite a non-Jew at that point. And then the third serif, also minority opinion, is that the Rashba has one answer, that you're allowed to invite a non-Jewish avid or non-Jewish shivcha to Yontif meal, even if you do end up cooking more, as long as there's enough food that you could have fed the avid or shivcha anyway. So if there's enough food to feed the avid or shivcha anyway, even if you end up cooking more, so you could say some kind of reira, that I already have whatever the avid needs. Anything else I'm cooking is for the other people. So joining all those factors together, the Me'iri, that if you tell them ahead of time, I'm not cooking anything extra for you, the Sefer HaTanya quoted Magen Avraham, if everything's already prepared, you can invite someone at that point. One day in the Rashba, that if you have enough food ahead of time for the Nachri, that we're not worried about Shema Yarva B'Shvilo, even if you do cook more. So Betzirif, all those things, Rav Asher thought that under extenuating circumstances, there may be what to rely on, which would be relevant to inviting a conversion candidate to a Yontif meal. So there isn't necessarily a great solution to the problem. We have to figure out whether there is any tenable solution. But if there are conversion candidates in this situation, it's important to explain to them that if you're not getting invited, it's not because we don't value you. It's because there are certain halachic impediments that pose a problem. And even if we're not able to invite you to a meal, we'll do what we can to provide or to ensure that you have as educational and meaningful a Yontif experience as possible. Let's talk about one other related issue to the mitzvahs, et cetera, with conversion candidates, and this has to do with post-conversion. Does a non-Jew who converts need to do tevilas kelim for the kelim that he owned up to that point? Rav Osner, Shevet Alevi, Chelek Dalet Simen Sadi Beis Os Beis, Chelek Dalet Simen Sadi Beis Os Beis, writes that he wasn't sure about this. Nistapakti, L'inyan Gershin Iskayer, Imsarach Tefilah Kelev. He wasn't sure whether you need Tefilas Kelim, Mikra Din. On the one hand, Ein Lecha Yotze Mitumas Gai, V'nifnas HaKadush Yisrael Godom Yizeh. On the one hand, this is the Mela, you buy something from a non-Jewish store owner, so you have to be Tovel. But here, the non-Jew himself is now becoming Jewish. So the non-Jewish Kelim are now owned by a Jew. So that you definitely should require Tefilas Kelim. Or on the other hand, no, maybe Tefilas Kelim is only Dumya Demaisa Shaya. Maybe it's only like the model of Clay Midian, where it was acquired there through a war or through buying, acquired from a non-Jew. But here it's a different situation. There's no acquiring going on. So Rav Osner thinks that you don't really need Tefilas Kelim because it's not Dumi Demaisa Shehaya. It's not exactly based on the clay Midian model. But then he says maybe not. Maybe the real factor is that it belonged to a non-Jew. And here it does belong to a non-Jew. Belonged to a non-Jew who converted himself. So he thinks that you should do Tefilas Kelim in the end. Sitz Eliezer, Chelech Chesim, and Yotes. Sitz Eliezer, Chelech Chesim, and Yotes. Leaves it as a suffix. He says you should do Tefilas Kelim without a bracha. But, do Tefilas Kelim, just don't say bracha because it's a suffix whether there's a chiyuv at all. And then the Sefer Tfilas Kalim, the classic contemporary work on Tfilas Kalim, written by Tzvi Kona B'nei Brak, that's his conclusion as well. To be told without a bracha, he quotes that from Dayan Grosness from the London Besdin, Tfilas Kalim without a bracha. There is a hard to understand statement that the Shem Yishmuel attributes to his father, the Avnei Nezer, that a ger who converts doesn't need to do tefillas kalim because the tefillah on him counts for the kalim as well. And when he goes to the mikvah, that covers the kalim as well. So says the Shem Yishmuel, the name of his father, the Avnei Nezer. Reshechter told me that he once asked the current Sakachava Rebbe, came to visit once, and he asked the current Sakachava Rebbe what pshat in this representation is, and he had no idea. So that's a little bit hard to understand. There is a lashon in the Ritva on the end of Avodah Zarah that it sounds like when you're tovel the kalim, you're basically converting the kalim on some level. You're transferring it from status of an akum to kedushas Yisrael. But still, you need to do tefillah for that. So why should that make any sense that when the ger goes to the mikvah, that covers the kalim as well if the kalim don't go to the mikvah also? So that's a little hard to understand. Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the current Sephardi Rav Harashi, wrote a beautiful kuntris called Klolei Hagiyur, which is published in one of the volumes of an annual convention or conference of Dayanim of the Rabbanut. So they put together a volume of their proceedings every year. So a few years ago, they published his over 100-page Kuntres of Klolei Hagiyur. So he writes over there that if it's metal kalim, the metal kalim, according to the most Rishonim, even if it's not one of the metal system of the Torah, that's a chiyuv tefilas kalim d'oraisa. That he should do tefilas kalim for. If it's glass, that's only derabanan. So then you could be mekel. And it could be the best solution is what the Sefer Mishpat Hagerim writes in the name of other svarim, that if you want to solve the bracha problem, you have a suffix whether you're chayiv, so we say do without a bracha. So better that the non-Jew, when he leaves the mikvah, should go buy a new kli from a non-Jew that you're definitely chayiv in tefilas kalim for, and you'll say bracha on that, and then you'll patur all the other kalim that you're going to do tefilas kalim on. Rav Asher Weiss, in a very brief tshuva that was originally published in Tchumen and then republished in Minchas Asher Chela Gimel Simen Samach Vav, Chela Gimel Simen Samach Vav assumes that it's a, to him it's a davar pasha that you don't need tefillah because no one ever spoke about it. So that's in Rav Asher's way of viewing the world. That's very significant. If no one wrote about something before, so he thinks that it must be it's not a concern. So none of the Rishonim talk about it, not discussed in the early literature, so it must be that there's no requirement to tefillah scale. I could have said that no one talked about it because it's pasha that you do need tefillah scale. So I'm not sure how it's clear the rye is in that direction. But Rashi assumes davar pasha has no need for tefillah scale because no one ever said such a thing before because it's not dumia de kli midyan. In the case of kli midyan, there's a kinyan. You acquired something. Here you're not acquiring anything. So there's no need for tefillah scale. What about hagalah scale? So if you have a kli that has belios of non-kosher, so you have to kosher the kli. So this conversion candidate's been keeping kosher. He koshered his home a year ago, and he has all kosher pots and pans. But he's been cooking for the last year. And he was a non-Jew, so that's bishalakum. So do you have to do hagalas kalim or hefsher kalim from bishalakum? So it was all kosher food, but the non-Jew was cooking it. So tefilas kalim was one thing. But does he have to do hechsher kalim? Does he have to do liban and agala for all his kalim because of a bishul akum? So in general, that's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. Do you need to do hechsher kalim for bishul akum ever? That's 2 days in Simon Kuf Yud Gimel Sifta Zayin. Does bishul akum aser kalim? If a non-Jew came into your house and made an egg on your frying pan, do you have to kasher the frying pan? So that's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, and in general, we're machmir on that you do require hechsher kalim for bishul akum. So in the Sefer Mishpat Hagerim, he writes that that's why if a non-Jew converts, he has to do hechsher kalim for all his kalim because of bishul akum. And Rav Schechter thought that's not the case, because it's true that bishul akum in general we're machmir on. What's the reason for Bishul Akum? Why are you not allowed to eat food cooked by a non-Jew? Because of the Chashash Kasanus. We're worried that you may come to marry a non-Jew. So in this context, the person was cooking his own food, as my friend Rabbi Danny Rapp likes to say, we're not worried that you're going to marry yourself. So what's the Chashash Kasanus? That this guy was cooking his own food, and now he converts, and I asked the Hefshir Caleb because who are we worried that he's going to marry? So Reshechter thought that there's no need for Hechsher Kalim in that context if a non-Jew converts. So Hechsher Kalim is what do we make of that? And Tfilas Kalim, it sounds like Rav Asher Weiss, notwithstanding the consensus of Poskim is that you should do Tfilas Kalim without a bracha. Okay, we'll stop here for today, and Mirtz Hashem will find another topic to talk about next week.
Yashar Koch, Racha. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rav.